This is the Australian public's assessment, the healthcare system, really prior to the pandemic. How's our hospitals and our healthcare system coping, the emergency departments, the ambulance system? And there's been a steady decline over the last 3 years. The waiting list for elective surgery is blown out, the waiting times for ambulances blown out, the waiting times in emergency departments all around Australia is blown out. So it's really concerning. Workforce shortages are a big issue, but there's a lot of issues involved, and unfortunately, there's no easy fixes. Hi, I'm Stephen Mason, CEO of the Australian Patients Association, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Focusing on pharmacy management and ownership, the PBCN podcast supports the improvement and growth of your business performance with insights and advice from a range of industry professionals. The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way.
Today, we're talking about what patients think of Australian healthcare. Our guest is Stephen Mason, Chief Executive Officer at the Australian Patients Association, and Stephen's going to take us through the results of the recent Australian Healthcare Index. The Australian Healthcare Index provides a pulse check on healthcare in Australia from patients' perspectives and experiences. More than 10,000 adults right across Australia participated in supporting the survey and provided their personal points of view and experiences of the public and private healthcare ecosystem. Stephen explains the report's key findings and trends, helping us understand what Australians think of our healthcare system and what it all means for healthcare professionals. Here's Stephen. Stephen, welcome to the show and thanks for joining us today. You are joining us to talk about some of the results of the latest Australian Healthcare Index survey that was released recently. To start with, can you give us the big picture stuff? Tell us about the survey, who's involved, how it's conducted, and ultimately why it began.
The survey is called the Australian Healthcare Index. It's been going for about 3 years, and we do it in conjunction with Health Engine, who's a large booking site. It's an Australia-wide survey. It goes out to 1.7 million people all around Australia, and we get over 10,000 respondents, and it is weighted, so there's no statistical distortions. The findings of the recent survey, which was released this month, are similar to the findings of the previous one 6 months earlier, and it shows the three key issues are workforce shortages, GP out-of-pocket costs, too many people can't afford to see their GP, and 41% are now not seeing their GP or seeing them less frequently. And the third issue is chaos in emergency departments, long waiting times, and that's concerning many patients.
Let's dig into those results, those things that stand out a little bit. Are they comparable to years in the past in terms of they're the same, or are there increases in those things that you just spoke about?
They're the same as 6 months ago, but they're not the same as a year ago. The GP issue has blown up over the last year. Going back 2 or 3 years, a lot of people were able to go to bulk billing clinics if they had affordability issues. And as a survey found out 2 years ago with the Guild that a high percentage of people couldn't afford their prescription medication, and we ran a campaign on that called Affordable Medicines Now. But then after that, the colleges and the AMA started putting pressure on the government for increased rebates. That didn't happen, and bulk billing clinics seemed to disappear. I'm sure that was a deliberate strategy, but it affected the needy. People in lower socioeconomic areas all of a sudden went to the doctor. It was a $40 out-of-pocket cost, in many cases $80, so they couldn't afford it. Then they went to emergency departments, which were already under pressure. So that exacerbated the problem. It extended the waiting list. So it really was a bad cocktail.
We know from the survey that Australians' rating of our healthcare system, it continues to decline. How concerned are you about this? And do you think our politicians are listening to what patients are saying and paying attention to what they're doing?
I do think politicians are listening. We get calls from the Prime Minister's office, the Department of Health, and they're noting that. This is the Australian public's assessment, the healthcare system, really prior to the pandemic. How's our hospitals and our healthcare system coping, the emergency departments, the ambulance system? And there's been a steady decline over the last 3 years. It wouldn't be surprising. The waiting list for elective surgery is blown out. The waiting times for ambulances blowing out. The waiting times in emergency departments all around Australia is blown out. So it's really concerning. Workforce shortages are a big issue, but there's a lot of issues involved, and unfortunately there's no easy fixes, but reversing the trend in bulk billing is a good start. But there are some concerning trends.
Well, speaking of trends and fixes, something that jumps out from the report for me as a key finding, it revolves around that decline in bulk billing, and you've mentioned it a couple of times already. We know that to help address this, the government has already announced a new task force for significant reform of Medicare. I think it's safe to say that it's no secret that Medicare, it's really no longer fit for purpose. Before we dive into that and I ask your opinion on the reforms, just initially, in your words, why was Medicare set up and what was it supposed to do and be delivering for us?
Medicare was set up 50 years ago and by Deeble and Scotton, and we've got to know both those people. And the key purpose was to ensure that all Australians had access to elective surgery, right? That was the key reason. Now, it's changed a lot since then, but that was 50 years ago. And as you rightly said, a lot of reviews of Medicare, and we've had the Medicare review task forces really reveal that the 50-year-old system's now no longer fit for purpose.
And so with that understanding and going back to what I spoke about before in setting up that question, in your opinion, do you think the reforms are enough, or do you just think this is a band-aid or a patch-up job?
Look, the reforms were a good start, and we sit down with our Ambassador for Health Reform, Dr. Nick Coatsworth, and others, and we talked to members of the task force like, Stephen Duckett, and our informed opinion is that it's a good start, and it's really a bit too early to know how effective the reforms will be, but we suspect that further reforms will be needed.
Well, just pushing on that point or even poking that pain point, do you think, to wrap that sort of theme up, do you think that given its intended purpose, what you spoke about before, do you think Medicare's failing the Australian people?
At the moment, it is to some extent. It's still a better system than what a lot of other countries have, but it certainly needs to be improved. And the first start is reversing the decline in bulk billing.
So, Stephen, getting back to the survey and having had a look at it myself, 18 to 34-year-olds, they're a pretty interesting cohort. What do we know about them and why are they a concerning group looking at the results from the survey?
They've got a lot of issues. They are in insecure jobs, renting, and suffering from cost of living pressures. Now, high percentage have mental health issues. It's very concerning when you read the survey. You can almost look at one in two person in that category and think, well, they've got some issues. So we have to do more to support that cohort. To me, they're the future of Australia and they're forgotten. Seniors get well looked after, a lot of people on concession cards, but not that 18 to 34. We've got to do something to help them. A good start as for those on low incomes to provide bulk billing.
Another concerning trend looking at the report that we're seeing is, and you alluded to it before or mentioned it before, is worker shortages in a range of areas, general practice, nursing, and just healthcare roles just generally. As our listeners would be aware, the same is true in pharmacy, and the Guild has a significant research project underway to try and understand the drivers and ultimately some possible solutions. It's called the Workforce Capability Project. What are some of the reasons that you see for GP shortages? And then from those shortages, what knock-on effects are they having on the healthcare sector?
We were one of the few organisations that were invited up to Canberra for the GP summit, I think back in October last year. It was interesting sitting down with all the GPs, but we did our research and we spoke to a lot of medical students and said, well, here's all the stats. You know, 30 years ago, 40% of medical students ended up being a GP. Now it's only 12.5%. So it's only 1 in 8. Why? And all the medical students said, look, we're doing a 5 or 6 year course, but every year we're spending a month in hospitals and we like the collegiate atmosphere. We're learning off other doctors, professors, surgeons, and nurses are great, other healthcare workers. And we spend in that whole 5 or 6 years, 1, maybe 2 weeks with a GP. And some of them said, look, I had a really good GP. I'm thinking of becoming a GP. It was a great experience. But a lot of the others said, I had a grumpy old GP, didn't want me there, and there's no way known I'm going to be a GP. But most of them said, look, with all the time I've spent in hospitals, which over a 5 or 6 year period could be 6 months, I really enjoy the atmosphere. I learned off others that collegiate atmosphere is fantastic. With the GP, it was a bit lonely. Sure, there was a receptionist, but you're one out. You're not really learning off others, and a young person wants to learn and they like the collegiate atmosphere. So the colleges have to do a lot about that. They've got to look at the training. They've got to make sure these medical students spend more time in general practice and appreciate the benefits they can get from general practice. So as a result, we've got a GP shortage. But as Nick Coatsworth says, if you compare the number of GPs per 1,000 population with what Britain has, we're well ahead of them. I forget the number, but we've got more than double the number of GPs per 1,000 population. So, but it's a declining trend. It's a declining trend. You know, healthcare in America, and that's different. They don't use GPs as much. They go direct to specialists. A lot of other countries in Eastern Europe, India, etc., where they go direct to the specialist. They don't need to be referred by a GP. If the shortage of GPs continues, we're going to have to look at that, bypass the GP for major things and go direct to the specialist, the cardiologist, whatever. But really, it's not just the government. It's the Royal Australasian College of GPs and the other colleges have to look at the training program and how they encourage more medical students to take up their profession.
If that trend does continue, the declining trend with GPs, it might be the point where continuing to expand the scope of practice for pharmacists might really help lift the game of the whole healthcare system. What do you see happening in the other healthcare professions, both in Australia and overseas? So expanding on that point that you made about people going direct to specialists, those things that could be implemented in Australia to help ease the burden on hospitals and GPs?
Look, I think that's inevitable. We've got telehealth. I can see telehealth expanding, more virtual care, but expanded scope of practice for pharmacists just make a lot of sense. Particularly in rural and remote areas, all our surveys indicate that pharmacists are the most trusted profession in the healthcare sector, and they're convenient. There's so many pharmacists, I think offhand, 3,500 around Australia, and patients like the convenience and they develop a good relationship with their community pharmacist. And all the surveys we've done, the trials in far north Queensland have been very successful. And patients all around Australia support expanded scope of practice.
Shortages are a pressing issue, let's stay on it for a second. It's something that really can only have a long-term focus and plan. You spoke earlier about how people might be able to focus on the training programs for GPs, but that can take a long time to review and then develop and then implement and then the benefits to flow through. It feels as though we need action and change now. How do you see healthcare in Australia adapting to worker shortages, first in the short term and then as we progress and push that timeline out further?
In the short term, the trend seems to be, you know, telehealth, virtual care. There's no doubt the government's looking at more migration, but there's a lot of competition. We're advertising for nurses in Britain. In Britain, they're advertising for Australian nurses and Australian paramedics. So it's a very competitive field. But look, one thing that can be done is better management. When I talk to the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation, they're training more nurses than ever, but it's the dropout, the burnout. Nurses are working 60 hours a week. After a while, they burn out. I was speaking to a lot of nurses just in the last few days. They're all doing casual work because they got burnt out during the pandemic. They always used to be permanent workers. Now they're just working 3 days a week. So we've got to carefully manage our staff, particularly in public hospitals, so we don't burn them out, right? So we reduce the loss of skilled workers.
Let's expand on that just a little bit. Let's say you have a magic wand, you have blue skies, you're looking into the future, it's the perfect world. How far away is that for the healthcare system? I know it's a very tough question, but how far realistically do you think it is until we can see meaningful change? And what does that vision look like for you?
It's a very tough question because I don't have a crystal ball. But as you said, these things take time. By the time we revise the training program for medical students to encourage more medical students to undertake general practice and the medical students do their 5 or 6 year course, you're really looking at 5 to 10 years. But there's a lot of other advancements. Look at telehealth. You know, it really took off during the pandemic, but it's continuing. And people like the convenience of telehealth. I know we need a few boundaries around it, and telehealth's not appropriate for everything. But a lot of patients like the convenience of it, and if they're well run, they've got access to the patient's medical records, and if they're run by registered and responsible doctors, generally that there's a good outcome. And even though there's been a lot of discussion about abuse of telehealth, we get very few complaints about telehealth. There's a few, but we get complaints about everyone.
Yes, no doubt. It doesn't matter what you do, you can't keep everybody happy. And one of my favourite sayings is, if you're keeping everybody happy, you're probably not trying hard enough.
So true, but there's always that 2%. There's always the 2% of rotten apples, and a good college, a good organisation has to weed out the 2%. So there's always got to be a bit of auditing, policing, monitoring to make sure the incompetent or the negligent ones are removed.
100% agree. Stephen, it's difficult for businesses, particularly like pharmacies, to grow and adapt without knowing the correct path to take. The Guild's framework for change aims to help with this, but in such a rapidly changing environment, businesses can actually just go straight to the source and ask their customers for feedback as well, and then take that on board and potentially make changes. How would you recommend pharmacies gather feedback from their patients and make change?
Well, we have been talking about this with the Guild, and thing about putting in a system where every pharmacy can get patient feedback on their experience. Going an airline flight, you're going to a hotel, you're always asked to fill out a survey about your patient experience, even when you go in for a pathology test, you're going to private hospitals. And, you know, we're thinking about doing that. in hospitals, we use Care Opinion. It's a great source for the patient experience. And in 70% of the case, the experience is very favourable. It's probably 20% where it's not satisfactory and 10% in between. But, you know, it's probably a good idea for any business to get patient feedback or consumer feedback from time to time to know how they're performing, because if they're not pleasing their clients, their business is going to decline.
Stephen, it's been a really interesting chat, a lot of great insights and learnings. If the listeners want to get their hands on the latest Australian Healthcare Index survey results, what can they do? Where can they go?
They can go to our website, www.patients.org.au, or they can just go to the Australian Healthcare Index website.
Stephen Mason, Chief Executive Officer, Australian Patients Association. Thank you so much for joining us today and discussing the latest Australian Healthcare Index survey results and ultimately sharing what patients say about Australian healthcare.
Thanks, Daniel.
It's been great having Stephen on the show to explain more about the survey, its findings, and what they mean for pharmacists, patients, and the wider healthcare community. When it comes to healthcare, there really isn't much difference compared to other sectors of life and the economy. Australians want convenience, low cost, and excellent service. Of course, this presents significant opportunity for pharmacists to step in and be part of the solution. To learn more about the Australian Healthcare Index and to read the report, visit the link in the show notes at guild.org.au. I've been your host, Daniel Loyson, and you've been listening to episode 127 of the PBCN podcast.
The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way. For more resources, to access support or advice, or to view this episode's show notes, visit guild.org.au.